I know you're broken hearted, cause the piece you're hoping for is off the scenes apart.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to We Love No Other podcast from IlliniBoard.com. I'm your host, Robert Rosenthal. My guest today is ESPN's John Gassaway. I've had him on the last 4 years, in January or February, usually right about this time, usually when he starts writing his Bubble Watch articles on ESPN. He is a Illini grad and Illini fan, and a Big Ten wonk. And well, we get into this when we start the interview, so I'll just get to that. Here is my conversation with John Gassaway. My guest today is ESPN's John Gassaway. We have done this, 4 years in a row now. We first tried to do it famously on this date. Something happened, I think, January 6th of 2021, maybe. But we've done this every year since. John, thank you very much for joining me.
Thank you for having me, and fingers crossed that there's no world historic event that happens like within minutes here. Yes. I actually forgot about that. You're right. That did happen.
Yes.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. You got it. Okay. Just your quick, I've done your history each time we've done this, but we should probably mention it. You had a blog, Big Ten Wonk, for a long time. People kind of, you know, maybe some people know you just from that kind of thing. I'm like, oh yeah, that's the wonk guy. You also worked with Ken Pomeroy and others very closely at kind of the beginning, the explosion of advanced statistics with college basketball. You write for ESPN, mostly along that topic. I'll let you fill in anything else that you want to there as well.
That's an excellent thumbnail history. I've got nothing to add except to say that if there's anybody out there who knows me only from Big Ten Wonk, I have to say, get outside more. That ended 17 years ago.
Oh my gosh. That's crazy.
It's been a while.
Yes, that's crazy. So, and also I should mention Illinois grad and Illinois fan. Manchester City fan. I only say that because Aston Villa beat City for the first time in like 20 years this year. Yeah, so yeah, okay. I can, for once, I can bring
that
up. Yes. I think I sent you a text or a tweet or something at the time, but yes. So, that defines you. And now we can get into all of this. So
let's do it.
The main thing I wanted to talk about is, yeah, I just wrote about this the other night, that these offensive efficiency numbers are starting, well, they're just scary good at this point. Really surprising. You know, Ken Pom has tracked this stat since 1999. This Illinois team is second only to 2005, and quite honestly is very close to 2005 in offensive efficiency right now. Defense is another issue, and we'll talk about that in a bit. But maybe since you know these stats like the back of your hand, just give the listener a general idea of what adjusted offensive efficiency, you know, where it comes from, and then what the adjusted part means to the stat.
Right. Where it comes from is how many points you score in 100 possessions. Our fealty to that number is curious because each game only has about 70 possessions. So, you know, it's like how many points you would score in about a game and a 1.4 games.
Sure.
But that's what that is. And then the adjusted part just means against an average Division I team. So you're not playing Houston. You're not playing whoever's number 362 in defense. You're playing the team halfway in between those poles. And this is how many points you would score. And yeah, on that, this year's Illinois team looks fantastic. And we can talk about that and possibly celebrate that a bit.
Yeah. You made me scroll all the way down to see who is. I was like, is Detroit Mercy dead last in defensive efficiency? But it's not. It's actually Oh, wait, the team that's 362 isn't down near the bottom. Looks like it's Arkansas Pine Bluff. So,
okay.
So somewhere between Houston and Arkansas Pine Bluff, you adjust it to what your numbers would look like against the average defense, and that puts up your thing. Because I've had a lot of people reach out when I've been tweeting about this. Brad Underwood mentioned the defensive efficiency numbers that they track. I don't know if it's straight KenPom or if it's their own internal system or whatever they had. He said in the post game after the game the other night that they had themselves as, I believe, seventh defensively nationally up through the Fairleigh Dickinson game, through all the games in 2023, starting in January in their adjusted defensive efficiency numbers. They had tracked them as 94th best since then. And so I had some people reach out and say, like, oh, well, that's just the competition improved. And I'm like, no, he was talking about an adjusted number to say, you know, where you're at, you should perform like this against that defense. And against this defense, you're probably going to perform like this, that kind of thing. Right. So I think we just need to establish that. Go ahead.
No. That's if they've got if the owner coaching staff has their own tracking that they do, that's great. Obviously, everybody's got their secret sauce, but if you're just into what our eyes are seeing, a straightforward way of measuring it is just what everybody's doing in Big Ten play. It's not a perfect round robin schedule, so you're not comparing apples to apples the way you can in some leagues. But even on that rather straightforward metric, Illinois is number two on offense with points per possession with a bullet behind, oh, guess who, Purdue. Mm-hmm. Very, very good offense any way you slice it, schedule adjusted or just straight counting points in terms of trips down the floor and conference play, very ably done by the Illini.
Let me mention that it's a bit odd to, I'd say, the general fan base. It's a bit odd when the off-season discussion was about point guard. The off-season discussion was about who's the lead guard. Every great Illinois team has the guy with the ball in his hands at the start of every possession and everything else. Who's the Frank? Who's the Darren? Who's the D? Who's the IO? That type of thing. And this has been done without that. You know, the guy generally bringing the ball up the court hasn't shot a single three-pointer all season. It's a different kind of offense. So from your observation from watching Illini games, where do you see the strength of the offense when it's not that conventional, you know, led by a really – you know, go-to lead guard in that sense?
Yeah, thank you for putting your finger right on it, because, you know, for Illinois fans of a certain age, as you and I both are, sir, who want to compare everything, and I mean everything, to 2005.
Yes.
And why would we not? I mean, that was pretty special. So we're saying, okay, well, in 2005, in effect, we had 3-point guards. You know, that's the way you need to succeed. And right. In 2024, one can make a pretty compelling case. You know, really, we kind of got zero. And as a long time, and the internet will back me up if you Google John Gassaway doesn't like point guards or some such thing. But I've never really gotten into the point guard essentialist viewpoint, and particularly the term true point guard. I think that term has a freighted history, and I'm not comfortable with it anyway. But just in pure basketball terms, if you're getting the job done, I really don't care how you're getting the job done. And Illinois is a beautiful example of that. And you took the words right out of my mouth. The guy on the floor has made zero threes this year. If you want to KenPom this thing, you know, which is assist rate, which means, you know, percentage of made field goals that, you know, you yourself assisted on during your minutes. These are all incredibly low assist rate. You know, nobody's in anywhere close to leading, you know, the Big Ten or anything. I mean, but, you know, everybody's kind of, you know, sharing the sugar. So it's spread across the team. There is no you know, point guard figure where you're like, ah, this is the floor general. This person will get the ball to the right person. We don't have Tyrese Halliburton on this team.
Right.
And so we're rolling that statement like a boxcar up against the previous one. We've got one of the best offenses in the country. And I think we can, I think that can tell us something if we listen, and we can get into, you know, why our offense is so good. And we will, it's so good. But one thing it's not because of is because of some, you know, masterful kind of Deron Williams figure, D Brown figure, point guard. We don't have that, and we're doing well. Right.
Yeah, let's maybe talk through the idea of efficiency, because I think that could lead us into the next thing I want to talk about, which is the reason it's done by possessions is it can envelop everything that an offense might do wrong. You know, when you have a turnover, an offensive turnover, you're obviously getting 0 points on that possession. When you get an offensive rebound, you get a second chance to have points on that possession. When you get to the line, you increase your chances to have points on a possession. When you shoot better, you know, all those things that an offense could do well leads into that efficiency numbers, which is why it's tracked by possession. So given that, I would say that of those things I mentioned, the Illinois strength is probably offensive rebounding. Like, this is a good offensive rebounding team. It's not some Micah Shrewsbury Penn State team that shoots the shot and sends everyone back and doesn't even care about offensive rebounds. They just don't want to give up fast break points. You know, it's a team that will chase offensive boards, especially from the wings, diving in and that type of thing. We've seen Justin Harmon do that many, many times. Quincy Guerrier loves to rebound from the wing and come slicing in to get a front rebound. So, you know, would you say that that's maybe one of the strengths of this team when you look at it, as like they get more chances because they can get offensive boards?
That is definitely a strength. They are one of the better offensive rebounding teams anywhere. Again, the irony is they are in the Big Ten. So there's another team called Purdue. This guy, a 7'4" guy, and they are even better in Big Ten play at the percentage of their own misses they rebound. But that is a high standard. Illinois is excellent, and that plus a less outstanding turnover rate, but still a very, very good turnover rate.
Yep.
That gives them a high number of shots. And the thing about offensive rebounds is that you can't get one if you've already turned the ball over. So turnovers are the more significant stat. And Illinois is excellent, you know, one of the best teams in the Big Ten. And that's enormous, because they do both of these things far better than they shoot the ball. They're good. They're fine in terms of shooting, but they're mid pack in the Big Ten, and yet here they are with the second best offense. So that tells you volumes right there. It's because they're getting more shots, and that's because of a low turnover rate and an outstanding job on the offensive glass. You're exactly right.
Yeah, and the I guess all of that leads to you know, what I'm sitting here like thinking as you're saying that is like, there's so many different ways to have a good offense. Like Northwestern, if I remember correctly, was like near the top in the country in turnover percentage. Their exactly. idea is like, we will not turn over this ball. We will max out every possession. We're not going to give away 11 free. Let's go the other ways every game, you know, there's ways to lean into it. We've seen it on the defensive end that Brad Underwood came here with this defense that was like, hey, we're going to pressure you, build up those turnovers. Well, gave up a lot of backdoor layups because everybody's out above the key chasing the ball.
But it was fun to watch.
Yes, that's right. That's right. So there's just like, there's all these different ways to go about it. Are you surprised with some of the adjustments this year? I mean, we know what we saw last year. I think too much gets thrown on Matthew Meyer as like, he was the problem or whatever, you know, if it was just wasn't him. There were a lot of issues last year, freshman guards, things like that. You know, it was very clear that Underwood wanted the Quincy Guerrier-like long athlete that can shoot a three and can rebound. You know, he went after that. He wanted a Damask-like guy on the lineup, and so he went out and found it and built it like this. Are you, you know, what are your thoughts on how this offense was built compared to what we saw last season?
Well, in terms of the two things that we've named, Underwood is getting to have his cake and eat it too. You know, offensive rebounding doesn't typically or stereotypically even go along with, you know, taking care of the ball. In fact, many teams choose not to go after offensive boards and just focus intensely on taking care of the ball. That's kind of the Northwestern playbook, or they're not against offensive boards, but a better example is John Beilein back in the day, or Bo Ryan back in the day. Underwood is saying, you know, we're not going to get quite that low on turnovers ever, but we're going to get like 80% of the way there, which is really good, much better than Purdue, and we'll be almost as good as Purdue at offensive rebounding. So with this rotation, he's been able to do that, and I give him full credit. And the thing that Illinois fans know from experience, or at least that I have lived as experiences, you tend not to watch a game and say, wow, great, you know, great job not turning the ball over. It just happens. And then when you do, you know, turn the ball over, which happens annually when we play Marquette, it just drives me nuts. And it's like,
Yep.
If only we wouldn't do that. So, yeah. You know, you notice it when it doesn't happen. And the rest of the time, they're doing a really good job at that. So, you know, hats off to the architect, you know, Brad Underwood. Obviously, I'm not, you know, revealing any news to people who watch this team, but Guerrier and Ty, you know, really, really strong, really decent on the offensive boards. And then during those cameos, you know, Dane Danger is just incredible, you know, and that's that's kind of the template, is that we that's kind of a Big 12 look, is that you've got a guy who comes in, you know, and he gets three fouls in like 5 minutes, but he also gets like six offensive boards. He's kind of good to sit down.
Right. Right.
That's what Dane himself, fresh from the Big 12, kind of is. And it works. It's been working great in terms of what I call shot volume for the Illini.
As a guy who has followed college basketball for a very long time, sorry about the very there. I could have said a long time, but I went with very long time.
All right.
Look of this team. So when you're watching a Illinois offensive set and they're five out, you know, they're passing it around with, you know, Hawkins comes out of the lane and he's on the wing or whatever, and there's like no one in the paint or any, like, does it, what's your reaction to that? Does it feel weird to watch a college basketball game where it's like, is this like a five out, zero in offense? Like, what's going on right now? You know, what are your thoughts on the changes to the game like that?
Well, you know, I'm not sure if there was a moment when, you know, Villanova was doing this mostly with their starting five. They had Cosby Roundtree coming off the bench, but, you know, mostly guys who would shoot threes, mostly five outs, two national championships in 3 years. You know, we thought, okay, you know, this is basketball solved. This is what everybody's going to do. And for whatever reason, it didn't really happen. You know, there was a pandemic. They moved the line out, the three-point line out. Three-point attempt rates have stayed pretty steady now. But some teams do it, and Illinois does it. And if you had told me before the year, and I mean, I did, I wrote some, you know, I wrote at ESPN best and worst case scenarios for the preseason AP top 25, and Illinois was 25. So I was like, hey, all right, get your act about Illinois.
Cool. Yeah, yeah, there you go.
And under my best case scenario, it was, you know, Coleman Hawkins starts making threes. Well, he has. And that powers your five out right there. I mean, the opposing defense has to respect that, where before, you know, it was like, hey, go ahead, play five. We're good. You know?
We'll
stay here in the paint. So that's been a new wrinkle. That's been a good development. And it's made a difference, no doubt.
You mentioned Bo Ryan earlier, and I've thought that a couple, not, I'm not saying this is a Bo Ryan offense, but there is that, the frustrating thing about playing Wisconsin in 2012 or whatever was their bigs could always shoot and their guards could always score in the paint, like even post you up, you know. We used to, my friends and I used to talk about it. It was like the Bo Ryan thing is, you know, big guys who are guards and little guys who are post up players, kind of thing, you know, just flip the opposite skill for each position and he'll build an offense out of that. Do you see some of that in what's going on? I'm not saying Coleman is Frank Kaminsky or anything like that, but do you see some of that in what Illinois is doing this year?
Yeah. I mean, we didn't know what we were getting, Damask, you know, for example, and Booty Ball, and let's not overlook the obvious. I mean, he's 6'6", you know, so that can be a tough assignment for an opposing defense. We've got a lot of minutes on the floor when Damask or Ty Rogers are the smallest guys on the floor, and they're not that small. And you referenced the fact that Ty doesn't shoot all that much, and that's been the other secret recipe surprise, is that sometimes when you've got a guy on the floor who doesn't shoot that much, you know, the defense can capitalize on that. That really hasn't happened, or not has not happened to the extent that one might expect. So, you know, these are all really positive things that you couldn't count on in the preseason when, you know, some of these guys were transfers we hadn't seen. And you're exactly right. It does have a Bo Ryan aspect. And again, not to, you know, compare everything to what Nova was doing 6 years ago, but I mean, definitely, you know, if you saw those teams, Jalen Brunson was all about, you know, backing a guy down just like Damask is doing here and posting him up. And you could see the opposing guard being like, you know, what is this? You know, I'm never guarding in the paint. What's happening here? It's a good way to play when you're making the defensive assignment do something they're not used to do, whether that's a big guy shooting a three or a little guy in the paint.
Okay, let's flip over to the what has been the uglier side. I mean, we'll probably preface that. Like, if you sort KenPom by conference-only games, you know, the offense is number two behind Purdue. Defense is only fourth in the conference. It's not like this defense has been horrific. We're not dealing with what Michigan has right now or Iowa's struggles or anything like that. But as fans have known and have seen, and when Michigan State goes on those two late half runs and they're getting to the rim and, you know, Hall, we can't guard him down close to the basket, and, you know, all these struggles are happening, there's been frustrations with the defense. So how have you seen the defense this season, and what do you think is leading to some of these struggles?
You know, we've got to pick our strength, and our strength is not going to be defense. We're okay. You know, we're pretty good. And as you referenced, pretty good in terms of Big Ten play, but not as good as we are on offense as far as not guarding Hall. You know, join the club. As we are recording this, he's coming off, I think it was a 29-point game against Penn State. So he's a legit good player. there's not necessarily shame in that.
Yep.
But some of the same things that we were describing, oh, that's why this offense is good, is why the defense is less good. Specifically, we take good care of the ball. Opponents do too. We've learned the lessons of the year one and two or 1.5 of the Underwood era intensively, and now opponents never turn the ball over.
Yes. It is. I was just looking that up earlier today.
Yeah.
It's crazy, the number.
In like, Big Ten play, it's literally like we're playing Northwestern every game. You know, that's how good opponents take care of the ball. Now, we've got a very nice Big Ten record. We outscore them anyway. But, I mean, if you're noticing that points are being scored, one thing is they're not turning the ball over. We're very good, actually, on the defensive glass. But, again, turnovers are prior to any rebounding process, both on offense and defense. And so the fact that we're, you know, really good on the defensive glass, we're not getting as much bottom line cash value from that as we might if there was a normal opponent turnover rate. But as a good Illinois fan, you know, I do see this glass as half full. If you had pulled back the curtain before the season and said, you know, here you go, for all of calendar 2024 so far, you know, in between the AP 10 and 15, maybe 9, I would have said, wow, I'll take that, you know. 100%. Even better at KenPom. Wow, okay, I'll take that. So I see the news as basically good. You know, there's good news in what has happened. I don't reflect that, as my wife will be quick to point out, in real time when I'm watching an Illinois game.
Yes.
Even when we're winning, I don't reflect that. But if I can step back for a moment, I say, yeah, you know, this has been a successful season. I will take it.
The stat I was looking up this morning is that in 2018, in turnover percentage for defense, Illinois was fourth nationally. And in 2024, that was Underwood's first year. And in 2024, we're fourth from last nationally, 358 out of 362. So it's just an incredible switch for a coach. You know, it would be like Shaka running some kind of completely different defensive scheme or something. Like, you know, it's just a 180. It's 179.93 degrees from, you know, what Underwood started with to where he's at now and how he tries to, you know, push his teams to play defense.
Well, the trick is to combine the two, you know, the early Underwood years, you know, quest for turnovers with good two-point defense, you know, and when you've got both of those.
Yes.
You've got something. It's really hard to do. But you might remember when we were forcing turnovers, our two-point defense was nothing to write home about.
Yes.
So there was a cost to be paid for all
this. Yes. I still remember sitting there. I can picture this moment. We were playing Michigan State at home, either the first year or the second year. And early in the second half, they were something like 21 for 28 in the game. Like, you know, I started looking up, like, what's the highest percentage anyone has ever shot? Because they were using all of that aggression. They were really good that year before they took their little tumble. But they were really good. And they just like, oh, you're going to try and steal this from us, giving us a free layup every time? We will take it. Yes.
So all in all, you know, I'll take the current, you know, time saying, oh no, we never forced turnovers. Hey, I'll take it. We're good. You know?
Yes. okay. So if Underwood has been saying this week, I mean, in the post game on the radio, when he comes into the arena and does the little thing they play over the speakers right after the game, he said, look, since the Michigan State game, we haven't practice 1 second of offense. We have fallen apart defensively. We saw it on the court in East Lansing. We have a lot to fix. What would you see as the things that need to be fixed? And again, it's fine, as you say. You know, if we compare to the rest of the Big Ten, out of 14 teams, defensive efficiency is fourth. So it's fine. It's okay. But what are the things that you think they could step up on the defensive end that would, you know, lead to what is hoped to be a deep tournament run?
You know, I believe Coach Underwood when he says that, and as we record this, we're about to get a great opportunity to check that progress. And great example of a kind of game where nationally nobody will notice before, during, or after, but to Illinois fans, you know, going to Maryland and playing a team that just absolutely, you know, I mean, they were kind of in control for the last, you know, 25 minutes of that game. Both Young and, you know, Reese just couldn't be stopped by our Illinois defense. So, and hats off to both of those guys. I mean, you know, Young is, you know, he's one of the leading scorers in the country. I mean, you know, that's he comes by that honestly. But Reese was kind of blowing up in that game. It's like, wow, yeah, we gotta take a look at this guy. So go to it, Illinois, you know, practice hard. And I know what, you know, nobody is talking about these Terps. They're below the, beneath the notice of Bubble Watch and the guy who does that at ESPN. I get it. Mm-hmm. They're not getting in the tournament, but boy, are they Illinois destroyers this year. And I'll look forward to seeing what the Illini can do on that side of the ball against Maryland.
It's funny. While you were saying that, since I just referenced that Michigan State game, I looked up the box score. So it was from 2018. I don't know if you'll remember this or not. So Michigan was, I mean, just in KenPom at the time, I'm looking at the KenPom box score. Michigan State was number 5. Illinois was number 105. So this is Underwood's first year. Things weren't going well. We don't have to go into that. But the Michigan State box score, we turned them over 25 times.
That's pretty good.
And they scored 87 points. It's just an insane box score. They shot from the floor 30 for 44 for the entire game. They were 4 for 9 from 3. They were 23 of 28 at the line. They out-rebounded us 37 to 15. And with all these offensive rebounds, it didn't matter if they had 25 turnovers, they blew us out. It was a crazy kind of, like, you know, I feel like I've learned more about basketball and efficiency and things like that in the last 6 years. And so to look back at that and say, holy crap, 25 turnovers and we gave up 87 points. That's, you basically have to give up a layup line and a bunch of free throws to make that happen. Well, that's exactly what we did.
You know, I mean, nostalgia is easy, you know, when you're talking about a loss and you weren't very good, but you know, it was Underwood's first year and like these guys, you know, we knew nothing was going to happen this year. And these guys were flying like crazy.
Yes.
trying to get turnovers. And they did. They forced whatever you said, 25 or 27.
Yeah, 25 turnovers.
Your opponent scored 87 points. I mean, you know, I remember those days very well. And it was kind of an easy watch. You know, it was more detachment than I can have now when we're, you know, kind of good. And I'm hoping for a good seed. You know, these guys were 100 and something, you know, at KenPom. It's like, hey, the coaches knew, you know, entertain me. The opponent has 87 points and 25 turnovers. Cool. I'm glad we're in a better place now. But the first year of the new regime is a different ball of wax entirely, definitely.
Cassius Winston in that game had a 1-to-1 turnover to assist ratio, 8 turnovers, 8 assists.
Wow.
That's just those were the days. Yes.
Wild times.
Yes. Okay, so, I mean, obviously for the Illinois fan base, everything's going to be focused on the tournament, right? Like, that second weekend, it's now been 19 years. We don't have to rehash it. It's all we've all thought about. It's all I thought about for weeks after the Houston loss. You know, after the Loyola loss, I couldn't look at the game of basketball for 6 months. You know, this second weekend thing is just going to be hanging over us until we do it. So how do you think this team is built for the NCAA tournament, for the way games are called, for the way what becomes really important when you get into the tournament? What do you think of the makeup of this team?
The only thing I find, you know, being important as a in the tournament is, you know, being good. And yes. People want to essentialize it as either offense or defense, or being, you know, top 25 at KenPom in both. And the reality is, you know, if you just look at the top six at KenPom, and I mean, period, just top six ranked teams on Selection Monday, that's your national champion. What is it? 17 out of the last 20, you know, every, every year, except, you know, basically UConn 2014 and 2011. But that's your national champion somewhere in those six. And, you know, that you don't have to be good at both offense and defense. Baylor in 2021 on Selection Monday was 40 something on defense. They won it all. So, you know, you can do it. And we need to be good, and we need to keep doing what we are good at, which is, you know, getting more shots, hopefully hitting our threes. And hopefully, you know, this is the main thing, is it, you know, getting a good draw. How many times have we, you know, we're a number one seed and we draw somebody in the round of 32 who's in the KenPom top 10?
Yes.
It's like, great. Okay.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Thank you. Thank you, you know, Naismith.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Houston was a five seed.
You know, this this is par for the course. You know, it's who you draw. Now, I mean, it's not all, you know, bad luck. I mean, you know, we didn't exactly set the world on fire against Arkansas last year. So, it's how you play. Don't get me wrong. And full credit to Loyola Chicago that year. Way to go. They were clearly the better team. They just, they would not be denied. But, I watched the draw closely. I'll put it that way. And, hoping for a good seed and a good draw.
Do you put any weight in, and this is just something I stumbled on after the Michigan State game, because Walker missed those final two free throws for Michigan State, which means they won by 8 instead of 10. And I was like, I don't know if we've lost by double digits this year. So I looked it up. You know, there's a couple small schools that haven't done it, but of the big schools, of the tournament schools, it was just Illinois, Kansas, Duke, and Florida Atlantic. And then Kansas got blown out a few nights later. So do you put anything in, haven't been out of any games? Before you answer, I'll just tell you where my brain goes with this. If you remember years ago, Grant Wall, God rest his soul, used to write an article where he would pick the eight teams that he thought would win the – who had a chance to win the national title. He'd write it every January, whatever. Everybody has that kind of version of that article. I remember one year that he wrote that his issue was with Illinois was that we had been blown out by, I believe, Indiana by 30, and was like, teams that are susceptible to the blowout, in my mind, are then susceptible to really not be able to run six games. They run a little more hot and cold, or however he explained it, and he held on to that. Illinois got blown out by 30-plus, and those 30-plus teams, in my mind, I eliminated right away. Do you take anything from, or statistically gather anything from, the fact that Illinois is lost by 8 or less in most every game, and is one of only really probably 4 teams that make the tournament that will be able to say hung into every game?
It definitely helps Illinois at KenPom, and it helps Illinois in the net rankings. Illinois has been, you know, a little better than their AP rank consistently all bubble season here. In the net. If you don't get blown out, and Grant Wall was the greatest guy. He helped me out in a very important way. He was an acquaintance. I can't, you know, nudge myself in the frame and say he was my best friend ever.
Right.
But I knew him. He helped me out as a guy who I was starting out. He was Grant Wall. I'm very appreciative toward him. And I think if he were here today, he would look at the SEC this year and say, well, nobody must be winning the national championship, because the entire story of the SEC this year has been, you know, Tennessee is amazing, and if they play at Alabama, they get blown out. Yeah. Alabama is amazing. If they play at Auburn, they get blown out. Auburn is amazing, and if they play at Alabama, they get blown. You know, everybody blows everybody out, and those are all really good teams. There's just something in the water in the SEC this year as far as the elite teams. So I don't really worry about that. It does mean, you know, Kansas is doomed. I mean, my gosh, you know, after what happened to Texas Tech, granted they didn't have Kevin McCullough, but, you know, that's what efficiency is tracking every possession the whole season, start to finish, and seeing how you do. And Illinois has done okay, even in the games that they lost. But we know how that is, both in the good and the bad. I mean, you know, on paper, we lost by, you know, 7 at Tennessee. But, you know, it wasn't like I was on the edge of my seat thinking, we're going to pull this out. Conversely, you know, Florida Atlantic, it just looked like we were just going to bury them. And then, you know, you look and you're a little surprised, you know, weeks later, oh, it was only a 9-point game. But, it, you know, it felt like we just had them, you know, by the throat the whole second half. So, setting boundary lines, as we must do, of course, win-lose, setting them can be a little fraught sometime. But you're right, Illinois has been right there. And it's a point that I used to make about, you know, Virginia back in the day. I mean, they were never out of any game ever. And that's what I was saying all of 2018 until they got beat by a 16 seed by 20 points. But that was exactly their pattern, is they went in to the last TV timeout in the under 4 in every single game, either, you know, winning handily or with a chance to win. And that's a pretty good way to play ball.
I'll ask one more KenPom question, and I should have mentioned that so it was you and Ken at Basketball Prospectus, and who was the other guy? You've mentioned him before. I can't remember the name you'd mentioned.
Well, there were several of us there, but when we were first starting, it was it was exclusively me and Ken doing college, and then we had, you know, one guy really at the start doing the NBA, and that was Kevin Pelton. If you're an NBA fan and you aren't following Kevin, you're making a grave mistake. He's an incredible basketball polymath who knows pro, college, men's, women's, more about basketball definitely than any other single human I know. So we had a good group back in the day.
So you would be very well versed in explaining. So I had someone reach out to me when I posted our latest KenPom after the, you know, when once KenPom updated after the win the other night, I posted it and someone asked about luck, and I've explained the luck thing just in the general sense of that's the plus or minus on your winning percentage based on what your statistics are. Your statistics say basically a team that's like this should probably have a few more wins here. They've been playing a lot of close games, and, you know, over time, those should start falling, some of them, in your favor, that type of thing. How will you, because that luck word is so, you know, such a lightning rod for people. How do you explain the luck column that Ken keeps?
You did an excellent job, and luck is a red flag as a word. I blame the English language, you know, happenstance, aberration, pick what you will. But this is what Providence fans were upset about a couple years ago, because they were winning every game by, you know, 1 point. They had an incredible record. And, you know, Ken was, you know, ranking them wherever he was ranked, much lower than they were all season long in the AP. And there was a great, I knew my friend Ken had arrived in 2022, and there was a picture of a fan in the stands at what was then called, you know, Dunkin' Donuts Center, a huge sign that said KenPom is a fraud.
Yes.
I was like, that is the coolest thing, man. When you have people, you know, waving signs that say, you are a fraud, you have made it. That is so cool.
Yes.
But Yeah, strictly speaking, you know, the luck kind of thing is going to be in effect. A good example this year is South Carolina, although they just got blown off the floor last night by Auburn. Hey, we were talking about this with the SEC. Yep. But, you know, a team like South Carolina is 21-4. And, you know, if you looked at their, you know, total points scored versus their total points allowed, and you made it nice and tempo neutral by doing that per possession, you can say, ah, this is the, you know, record we would expect from such a team. And then the difference in that is good or bad luck. That's basically what's going on there.
Yeah. To compare it to college football, it's similar to Bill Connolly keeps a turnover luck kind of stat. That's a very similar thing. You know, it drives me nuts. Like this year, probably the luckiest team in the country was Iowa. You know, everyone knew they should be bad because their offense was so bad. They got, you know, the field position things that happened to them, the number of things. And then Northwestern this year, I just have to say this because it still burns deep in my soul. Northwestern on offense in football fumbled the ball 14 times and recovered 13 of those 14 fumbles. You know, on average, an offensive fumbling the ball beyond the line of scrimmage is only recovering like 36% of those. So, you know, I always use the football one to kind of explain the basketball one. It's like you got to expect what's going to naturally happen over time. And then if you have a legitimately huge number, I've always used Oklahoma made the title game in 2008 or 2009, and they got completely blown out. And they got to that title game by recovering 19 of 20 fumbles and recovering like 44% of the passes they deflected as interceptions. You know, they had what I've always said is the single luckiest season in the history of college football. And when they got to the title game, it all came down on them very hard because they just didn't have the overall stats. So when Illinois basketball has this luck number that's pretty poor, I think maybe the way I explain it to people is just to say, like, Damask taking that shot in the lane to beat Northwestern at Northwestern, and it rimmed out, and we go to overtime and lose. And, you know, when you have a bunch of situations like that, look, Damask shoots, what, 50% from the field? Next time he takes that, he's probably going to make it, you know? It's that kind of thing that Illinois is getting so close to other wins that at some point they're going to start falling the other way.
And you had to bring that up. I mean, I knew when that shot rimmed out, I was like, we're doomed. And, yep, you know, the rest is history. I mean, they just, Northwestern played like their hair was on fire. Every three went in. Yep. Another good example for Big Ten fans who go way back, like 9 years, a historically good team on the luck stat was Maryland in 2015. They were like 14-4, you know, in Big Ten play. And that was when they had, you know, Mello Trimble and Des Wells. So yep. They would win every game by 1 point, you know, on a bit of hero ball in the last minute. Uh-huh. It just drove me up the wall. It was like, hey, we're 14-4.
Right.
So, you know, it happens. And what comes around goes around, and more power to them. But I don't know about these footballs and interceptions and, you know, I don't know what those are. But, yeah, in basketball, it happens, yeah.
Yeah, I see that South Carolina, even after last night, is still three in luck. So third out of, you know, 362 teams. Okay, I think we've covered it all. I said we go 45 minutes. We've gone a little bit longer. But anything else you want to share? Like, what are your thoughts on this team going into this tournament, you know, Big Ten tournament and into March? How are you feeling as a fan?
Fingers crossed, you know, hoping for the best. You know, I think my most enjoyable game overall might have been the Florida Atlantic game this year. And I guess that would be a question I would throw to all Illinois fans. My least favorite game was the aforementioned Maryland outing. And I'm hoping for more Florida Atlantic, you know, which, you know, that's a good vibe going into. That was a neutral site, mm-hmm. You know, just like the NCAA, you know, playing loose and confident like we did in that game against a quality opponent. You know, the Owls have looked good. So I'm holding on to that feeling, and we'll see what we get.
Well, I've already predicted that the committee is going to somehow give us Akron and John Gross in the first round. So, I'm going to be watching the MAC tournament very intently because I don't want to, like, I don't want any storylines. I didn't want Bruce Pearl in 2005. Like, I want a clean, easy slate. Give me something like the 80s when we kept making the Sweet 16 a lot. Like, give me something just, beat this team and that team and get to the Sweet 16. That's just what I need. I need to look at KenPom like, oh, great, we got the KenPom number 9 team as a 7 seed or whatever, or a 3 seed. So
So with you. All I want is those 3 or 4 days, that second week, where you're walking around and you're like, my team's in the Sweet 16. I just want that again.
There is an entire generation that doesn't even know that feeling.
I'm not expecting to win a national championship with this team, but second weekend, I would really like those 3 or 4 days.
So I'm so glad you said that.
Let's see if we can get that.
I remember that in high school. I remember that in like all the times when we're in the Sweet 16, that feeling of like, yeah, tournament's still going. We got a game Thursday night. Yeah, you know, like there's just such a good feeling to that.
Absolutely. Let's do it.
Let's get there. Okay. I appreciate it, John. Thanks for joining me and go Illini. Let's do this.
Go Illini. Thank you so much.